Welcome to the Lal-D edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the lysosomal acid lipase deficiency community.
This is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're speaking today with Dr. Paul Martin, Principal Investigator at the Center for Gene Therapy at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. Dr. Martin is also a professor of pediatric medicine at The Ohio State University. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Martin.
My pleasure.
Can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and your work?
Sure. So I have been a principal investigator in the Center for Gene Therapy here at Nationwide Children's since 2004. So I came here after starting out as a professor of neuroscience at University of California, San Diego. And while I was there, I worked on new therapies for treating Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And when we had discovered a therapy that we thought worked in mouse models for that disease, we decided to make the move to Columbus so we could work on developing human therapies in the Center for Gene Therapy that would allow us to treat patients. And so much of my career since then has been what we call translational medicine, or the ability to develop concepts for treatment into actual therapies for patients. And so that's really the goal of my lab and the goal of my colleagues at the Center for Gene Therapy at Nationwide Children's. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great place to work, and I'm happy to talk today about LALD with you.
Wonderful. Outside of LALD, you mentioned Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Can you just speak a bit about the similarities and differences between Duchenne, the other diseases that you have also worked on, and LALD?
Sure. So Duchenne is primarily a disease of muscle, where children develop muscle weakness, usually in the very early years of their lives. Patients are often diagnosed by the age of 4 or 5 and by a pediatric neurologist. And they have a slowly progressive and ultimately fatal disease that occurs over several decades. So there are also is involvement of the heart in that disease, but it is a genetic disease where a structural protein that provides strength to muscle membranes is missing. And because of that, muscles become damaged and ultimately weak. So that's a very different disease in terms of the molecular biology from LALD. LALD is a disease of a lipid metabolism, whereas Duchenne is a disease of a sort of a structure, on a structural protein. So molecularly they're very different diseases, but obviously they're both very severe diseases of childhood that greatly impact patients.
And until recently, from what I understand, there was no real therapy for lysosomal acid lipase deficiency.
There is an FDA approved therapy now. For LALD, which is cibalibase alpha, or Kanuma, which is a protein therapy that's given where the enzyme that's missing in the disease is given via the blood and taken up into tissues and can function pretty well as a replacement for the missing protein in the disease. So this is fairly recent development. By Alexion Pharmaceuticals that has greatly impacted patients.
And yet not everybody who has this disease can tolerate Kanuma. We've spoken with at least one patient who could not remain on this drug because she went into a shock. She stopped breathing. Is there, could you talk about the potential benefits of a gene therapy over something like Kanuma, and also the maybe the pros and cons that would entail with this kind of a drug?
Sure, absolutely. So when you look at the successes of gene therapy at the moment, and you look at a disease like spinal muscular atrophy, where kids are treated very early in life with a single treatment, that treatment is sustained, then therapeutic for a very long period of time. So the main advantage of gene therapy is, because you're putting the gene into the cells instead of the protein, the gene can produce protein and remain in the cell for a very prolonged period of time, perhaps even the lifetime of the patient. So it's what we call a one-and-done therapy. You're given a singular treatment, after which the therapy lasts, one hopes, in perpetuity, but that's not obviously proven for any of these gene therapies yet.
Right.
So that would be the main advantage. And also, because of the way we design these gene therapies, using a viral capsid called adeno-associated virus, which is from a virus that doesn't cause disease in humans, but it's fairly benign. All of the genome of that virus is removed, and the medicine is put in instead. So one can use that virus capsid fairly safely to deliver the gene to all of the tissues of the body.
Yes.
And so safety is, by and large, been shown in a number of patients already with this approach. And so that's also a positive. But the main positive for gene therapy, of course, is the one-and-done concept.
Right.
You can treat the patient, and that treatment can be sustained for a very long period of time.
Can I ask you, like Kanuma, in the case of SMA Zolgensma, Spinraza is an infusion, right? And it takes time, and you have to go to the hospital, and you have to get this, I believe, once every 3 months if you have SMA. So it represents a bit of an inconvenience for the patient and the families. In the case of gene therapy, as you say, it's a one and done. But doesn't that also mean that that patient has to fulfill certain criteria in the case of the presence or lack of presence, I should say, of antibodies that would render that virus delivery ineffective?
Yes, so I think that's one of the main potential drawbacks of all of these gene therapies, is that we're using a protein from a virus to deliver the gene to tissues that is from a virus that naturally infects humans. So some humans already have been infected with AAV, and they've developed antibodies to that infection, and those antibodies can block the ability of the recombinant gene therapy then to be delivered to tissues. Now, there's a lot of work being done to overcome that obstacle in patients, but in the short term, the FDA rules suggest that patients that have had that existing infection and have antibodies probably would not be allowed to be treated with these gene therapies.
Right.
I think that will eventually change, but at the moment, that's the situation we find ourselves in.
Compared to the patient side, the population of patients with either spinal muscular atrophy or Duchenne, LALD is significantly more rare, if I'm not mistaken. So would that also mean that the ability to develop a gene therapy for such a rare disease, it might be more difficult and therefore a lot more expensive because of the small patient size?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at that. One is that I think because gene therapy is becoming more common in general for rare diseases, costs are going to be going down. More and more companies are learning how to manufacture these medicines. And as that scales up and the technology develops, I think the costs with development for everybody will go down. That's good news, you know, for especially rare diseases.
So is there a specific age at which gene therapy would not be effective?
I don't think so. Our work primarily has been focused on a mouse model, treating a mouse model for the disease, which was developed by Dr. Hong Du at the University of Indiana Medical School. And through a collaboration, we've gotten access to that mouse. And what we find is that we can reverse disease that already exists. And these mice develop very severe disease symptoms as they grow older. And we have found that we can still treat mice even when their livers have expanded five times their normal size. That work is not yet published, of course, so it's subject to peer review. But I think that it's probably going to be safe to say that even patients that have had the disease for a long time should probably be able to benefit from gene therapy treatment.
That's great. Looking into the future, what do you think the timeline will be for the eventual availability of gene therapy specifically for LALD?
Yeah, I can't promise anything there. If there's one thing I've learned in developing a gene therapy for Duchenne, it's that things don't always go according to plan, and a lot of potential obstacles can pop up in the development process. So what I can tell you is that it's not going to be immediate because we are still doing the proof of concept experiments now. One would then have to do safety studies, including GLP toxicology studies, after which manufacturing would have to occur, and we would have to get an IND from the FDA to do a clinical trial. And, you know, that is our plan, but I can't promise a timeline for that. That would not be responsible.
Mm-hmm. What about compared to other diseases that have resulted in successful gene therapies? For example, hemophilia, as you mentioned, SMA with Zolgensma. Are you inspired by those stories? Do you see some parallels, for particularly for LALD? Are there some... is there some reason to expect that you can replicate those successes with this disease?
I think there are. And I think that one of the huge advantages of lysosomal storage disorders is because of the ability of lysosomal proteins to go out of one cell and to go back into another cell because of trans effects or bystander effects, that you don't actually have to hit every cell with the gene therapy in order to have therapy throughout the tissue or the body. So I think it's a very promising disease from that perspective, and also because of the relative lack of involvement of the nervous system, just the hardest part of the body to treat with AAV. That also is a potential benefit.
One last question, if I may. If you could just speak a bit about the issue of the one-off. If at some point in the future a patient might need to be redosed, from what I understand at present, that's not possible. You can't redose with gene therapy. Is there any reason to hope that might change in the future?
Absolutely. And people are working on that right now. There are drugs that can reduce antibody levels transiently in patients, drugs like rituximab. And there will be others that can break down pre-existing antibody titers to the point, hopefully, where retreatment would be possible. But it's not an insignificant problem to solve, because obviously you're putting trillions of viral particles into the patient when you treat them. It's very much like getting a vaccine. You're going to develop a lot of antibodies to that treatment.
Dr. Martin, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for talking with us today. This is Larry Luxner at Rare Disease Advisor. Thanks again.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.